Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is photographer Sally Davies, and we're talking about her new book, California Dreamers. Sal, welcome to the show. It is such a pleasure to talk to you about your work.
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Now, I'm going to ask you, is California Dreamers a companion volume to New Yorkers?
Oh, my goodness. It's totally fine to call it that. Yeah, in fact, there's sort of a free-floating idea that it might end up being a trilogy.
Uh-oh. What would be the third area?
Well, you know, I haven't really decided, but right now I'm thinking either Florida or Las Vegas.
So it couldn't be a quartet?
Yeah.
Because both of those are great ideas.
You know, Mark, one of the things
Now my mind's racing about talking and taking pictures of people who live in Las Vegas.
Well, there you go.
Oh, my God.
And also, Las Vegas has such a brand to the whole world, and it's probably not even any true, right?
Yeah.
But it's such a cliche, and I love shooting cliche things to kind of not have it be a cliche to show people that, you know, this is also here.
Oh, man. No, man. Sense. Oh, God. Now I have to live long enough to see both those volumes. Thank you.
Yeah, me too.
I would hope so. It would be weird if you didn't, and they still came out. Let's talk about California Dreamers. And
right.
For people who have never seen your work before, first of all, shame on you. And then, are these photographs of all people you know?
Oh, God, no.
Okay, you got to tell me about this, because I know some of the people you know.
Well, so California Dreamers sort of got going in the same way that the New Yorkers did, which is, I had the idea, and I had like a handful of people, maybe four people.
Okay.
And I thought, well, this is just how I roll. I thought, I'm going to start my idea, I'll shoot these four people, and maybe they would have ideas. And, you know, the New Yorker thing, I could have shot 5,000 New Yorkers.
I bet.
It could have been an almanac. But, you know, it's a book, and I was only allowed to publish 78 of those people. But the point is that once everybody had the moment with me and enjoyed themselves, I think, and got what I was doing, then they were like, oh my God, you got to phone my friend, you know, this or that. And so the New Yorkers went so well in that regard that I thought I could do this anywhere, I think, if I only knew like a couple or three people. And I had been coming to California for other reasons for the last 5 or 6 years, and I like it out here. I mean, actually, I'm here right now until the spring. And I thought, well, I have like five friends here. That's all I need. And they were like, sure, you know, we'll do it. And honestly, again, I could have shot a million people here.
Wow.
And I didn't even get to Northern California.
It's all Southern California, mostly L.A. and the burbs of L.A.
Mostly L.A. and a lot of Palm Springs, because I have friends in Palm Springs.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm at the mercy, if you will, of, you know, who I know. And I don't have a car. Which
okay.
is really funny, because I'm in L.A. without a car.
Whoops.
So that's just
okay.
how it goes.
You got to tell me, how do you approach a person for one of these photographs, and how do you set it up? Because, first of all, each one of these photographs is such a story in and of itself. I get lost in looking at all the detail in the background. I want to know what books they are, the artwork, the photographs, the way that their couch looks. These photographs are so rich in detail, many of them. Some of them are more minimal. But how do you set this up with the person? Do you choose how they pose, or do they?
Well, this is the truth.
Okay.
My credo with both of these books, and for whatever future ones, is I don't want to inflict an opinion
mm-hmm.
or a style or anything on anybody, because then it becomes about me and not really about the person. So my idea is I said yes to everybody. It didn't matter, you know, like in the California book, there's a judge, there's, you know, sex workers, there's like everybody, right?
Yeah.
So the idea is that they say they want to do it, and I come over and I look at where they live. And you know what, Mark? Our stuff tells our story.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, and that's what your photographs are all about, is how they tell that person's story.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is really what makes the portrait the real portrait of that person. And then the little life story, you know, that I put with it.
Let me talk about that, because the written details are really important, because there is a mini biography of each person who's in the photograph. How do you get that information from them? Do you have a questionnaire? Did they just tell you about their lives or what?
Oh, God, no. That part of these projects has kind of morphed over the two books. But I have a Q&A.
Good.
That's 10 questions, very, limited. And everybody gets the same Q&A. I don't care if you're Joe Biden or if you're, a janitor.
Yeah.
And the idea is to keep it, fair for everybody. Nobody gets more, spotlight than anybody else. And those questions are just exactly what you're reading is what I've asked them. And the funniest part of that Q&A is, what jobs have you had?
Oh, my God. And the list, the list is always like this whole wild list of all the completely unrelated things that they've had to do to pay the rent and eat the food. I mean, that in itself is sort of should be required reading for anybody who wants to understand America. I mean, what people have to do to make money is just incredible. And each one is different.
Yeah. And even with myself, because I actually am in the New Yorker.
I know. You're at the last one, I think, in the New Yorker, aren't you?
Yeah. And I thought, okay, how am I going to do this? Like, I have to just be the same as everybody. And I filled out the Q&A, and I had the same thought. I thought, I'm not that interesting. what am I going to say? And then I got to the job part, and I thought, oh, my God. As I started writing down the jobs, I just couldn't stop laughing. I thought, this is unbelievable how we go through life doing whatever we can do. But I'll tell you one thing important to me about these Q&As that I now know is that people were far more game to have their photo taken than they were to see their stuff in writing.
Huh.
They tended to be more proud of their stuff and their homes, whatever that was. But when they had to read about their life, they got very nervous. So that was like pulling teeth. And I realized early on, get the Q&A from them before you set up the shoot.
Interesting. Now, how large have you printed these photographs? Because I can imagine these being very, very large.
That's a good question. I mean, these were shot specifically for the book.
So two size.
Well, no, I guess they're around, I don't know, maybe like 13 by 19 inches. The Museum of the City of New York has that whole collection from the New Yorkers in their permanent collection now. And I think they took them at like something like that, like 17 by 22 or something. But those were shot on a high-res camera, so they could be quite large if that ever happened.
Again, to the audience who's listening, you fall in love with Sal's photography right off. There's so much to see and try to understand. And you read the biographies and you're trying to plug in all the things that you're seeing in the background to the person you're seeing in the photograph. And the photographs are just wonderfully lit and detailed. They're so rich. But what was
that's the people. That's people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now
I gotta ask you a couple of things. Okay.
Sure.
Many of the people in their biographies are sort of real promoters of the town that they live in, whether it's L.A. or New York. The L.A. people is like they finally ended up in L.A. and now they've found like Valhalla. It's really fascinating to read how they think about the place where they live. Now, in some cases, though, there's a conflict. There's the photograph of Osvaldo and Rosa Castro.
Uh-huh.
And he doesn't love it there. She does.
Yeah. They were a great family. They were one of the first people I shot. When I came here to begin, I landed in Palm Springs, and I have a good friend here who's also in the book, Arturo.
Yep.
And he's the person who runs the Kirk Douglas Estate. He's the property
manager. What a fascinating story that is.
Oh, beyond. And we're friends through, you know, other friends. And anyway, he said, I said, I don't, Arturo, I can't, I don't want a book of, you know, I hate to say this, but, you know, rich white people.
Right.
I don't hate rich white people, but it can't be a whole book on that. And he was like, no, I'll introduce you to some locals, some people who have, you know, alternative stories. And he introduced me to that family. And, oh, my God, they were like the nicest people on the planet.
Oh, and it's amazing to have read their statement and then look at them in the way they relate to each other physically in the photograph.
And I just want to add, which I'm sure you already noticed this, but did you look at the photos on the wall behind them?
Yes.
I was like gobsmacked. And you know, that was in the garage.
Oh, wow.
That wasn't even in their house. Because I said, where would be a good place for you where you feel, you know, part of your story can be told? And he said, in front of my family's photos in the garage. It's like, okay.
Wow.
So that was that.
Now, what are you shooting for a camera? And how long is a shoot typically? Or is it just vary all over the place?
Well, I've recently bought a Leica Q, and I'm going to dive into that for a while. But those two books were shot with a Sony A7R.
Okay.
And Sony, I've been a Sony person for a long time because they kind of pioneered the huge sensor on the smallest camera.
Mm.
So, you know, when you're walking around shooting all the time, you don't want to be carrying a 40-pound camera. I'm too old. My back's too bad. You know what I mean?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
So regarding the amount of time, now you're going to laugh when I tell you this, but, you know, 2 minutes to
what?
10 minutes?
You're right. Okay. Wait 1 minute.
Yeah.
I find that hard to believe, Sal.
I know. It's true. Like, okay, so when I started the New Yorkers, the first two people I photographed in New York, you know, I was just by myself, you know, and they were people in the neighborhood. I had some lights. I schlepped them. I had, you know, blah, blah. And I noticed as I was setting up the lights that the energy was shifting. People were getting not really impatient, but kind of uncomfortable. All of a sudden,
okay.
It was like,
yeah.
Ooh, what's going on here now? And we lost the moment, the magic. So
got
that
it.
Was it. I'm like, I'm not doing that ever again. I bought an on-camera flash.
Mm-hmm.
And before I even knock on the door, that flash is turned on. My camera's on. I bounce it off the ceiling so everyone has this sort of the same light. You know, it's really a democracy here of imaging, you know? And it's better. You know, nobody gets nervous. They just, it's first idea, best idea. You know, where do you want to sit here? Okay, great. Sit over there.
Wow.
The only thing I've always asked is please don't smile.
Huh.
And that's funny because I think there's a couple of people that are smiling.
Oh, yeah.
And
is only a few. Like, I'm trying to think. Charles Phoenix, he has the PJs that are in the same pattern as the couch.
Okay.
And I think he's smiling, if I remember right.
But if you knew Charles, he had to smile.
I got that immediately from the photograph.
But, like, you know, I just want to tell you something. That's not pajamas. That is actually a formal suit.
Oh.
And
wow.
Yeah, Charles is quite famous down in this part of the world in Southern California. You read his story.
Yeah.
He gives lectures on, you know, vintage, you know, mid-century America and stuff. He's a really interesting guy. Anyway, I got there and we were chatting and he said, I don't know what to wear. You know, my suits don't really fit me that well. Come and help me pick something out. You know, so we're in the big walk-in closet and we're going through stuff. And I'm like, I pull that suit out and I go, what's this? And he goes, oh, yeah, that's my cat head suit. It matches the couch. And I'm like, what? Well, let's just wear this. He says, okay. He's such a good sport. So he put the cat head suit on.
Oh, my God.
And then that thing he's holding.
Yeah.
He's an artist, and he designs fabric. So that was like, do you remember this? You and me are of a certain age, from the 60s. Pineapple rings with a maraschino cherry in the middle.
Oh, yes. Yeah, obviously.
So that's his fabric, and he was holding that. He was like, this
oh
is the fabric
God.
I'm designing right now. So it was very funny.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is photographer Sally Davies, and we've been talking about her new book, California Dreamers. It is a beautiful, rich Lutch book of her photography. I want to talk to you about people and their dogs. Now,
oh please!
In both volumes, New Yorkers and California Dreamers, there is a shitload of dogs.
Do you think there was more in the California book?
I was going to count, but I just didn't have time. But I will tell you, there's one cat in each book, I think, and a parrot. But other than that, it's dogs all the way down.
That's right. There's a parrot. That woman has a parrot in a cage at the pool, right?
Yeah, that's right. But I mean, and people insist on posing with their dog.
You know, Mark, again, nothing of this is planned or staged, nothing. So when I get there and they have a dog, people, listen, I'm a dog person, as you can see from my photo.
Yep.
I am my dog. Like to take a portrait of me without my dog is a lie. That's not a truth of me. And I think everybody sort of feels that way. So people are like, can my dog be in the picture? I'm like, of course. I don't care. So this is your moment. Do what you want. You know, and California people like have a lot of dogs.
Oh, they have a lot. And they do weird things to their dogs. There's a photograph of a woman. Everything's in pink, including her dog.
Oh, she's a personality down here. She's the pink lady of West Hollywood.
Okay.
And everything she does, it's her shtick. Everything is pink. Her car is pink. Her dog is pink. But she wrote me after I got home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes I become friends with these people, but often I don't. I never see them again, you know. She wrote me like a bunch of times and said, it's really important that you say in my bio that that's beet juice.
That's right. She was very clear about the fact that it was organic.
Right. She said, I don't want anybody thinking that I would do anything to my little pinkaboo with artificial dyes. So, okay, no problem.
Were photographing the dogs, and being serious here, was it tough because they didn't have the same kind of discipline that people do? Or that's the payoff for doing a two-minute shoot?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think most of the dogs were very well behaved.
Okay.
But I have to admit that because I love to photograph animals,
yeah,
I've done a lot of dog portraiture in my older life. And I kind of am very comfortable with dogs, and I know how to... You snap your fingers at the exact moment that you're about to press the shutter, and they look at you.
That's fascinating.
It's just, it's a timing thing. You got to be ready, you know?
And that does not work on cats. I'm a cat person.
No.
Cats will tell you to screw off.
Yeah. Well, what about the guy in California Dreamers who's, what's his name, Don Deers?
Okay.
He's a very successful movie guy here. He does props and set design, right?
Yeah.
So that's his house. So we're sitting there, and I'm just about to take the picture. I swear to God, that cat walked out of nowhere, sat down on that rug and looked at me. I'm like, Don, look. And he goes, oh, yeah, I know. That's what she does. I'm like, okay. We're being quite...
Yeah. Now, you obviously show these photographs after you develop them to the people. What have their reactions been?
No, I don't.
That's interesting. That's fascinating.
No, I don't give them their bios to read, and I don't show them their photos.
Wow. So have any of them picked up the book and then gotten in touch with you?
Oh, yeah, everybody does.
Okay.
And, you know, but here's the thing. This is interesting, and I have no conclusion yet, but the people in New York were different than the people in California. The people in New York were cool, and they loved it and all of that, but the people in California, they hustle in a way that New Yorkers, it's a harder hustle. New Yorkers are too cool.
Well,
you know, their hustle is a softer hustle.
I kept opening up both books side by side and trying to, you know, come to some conclusion about the differences between the two collections. The New York shoots seem to be a lot darker in tone.
Oh, interesting. Well, that could just be the printing from the factory.
In the California one, there's a lot of sense of an outside, sunny.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, you know, that was on purpose.
Okay.
People in California have huge sliding doors onto patios, and You know, people in New York just don't have that unless you're, you know, living on Park Avenue, and most people don't.
And there's no swimming pools.
No, there is no swimming pools.
I was fascinated that in each case there were people in each collection that I knew or I had interviewed. Donna Lethal, one of the first people in the book in California Dreamers. Yes. I've interviewed her on this show before.
No way.
And Pamela,
Donna and I are friends. We became friends after our shoot. We have a very good connection, a friend that lives in Winnipeg, which is my hometown.
Oh, nice.
Guy Madden, who's a filmmaker.
Oh, I've seen his film, The Saddest Song in the World. Was that his?
Yeah, I know.
That is a wild movie.
Yeah, he's a wild guy, and he shoots wild stuff. Anyway.
We could get off talking about that film. Pamela DeBarris, yeah. I interviewed about her book, I'm with the Band.
Oh, sure. Yeah, she was lovely, too.
And you know, she was the one with the cat, I think.
Yes. And that same as that cat. Just about to click, and all of a sudden the cat came out and just went there. Like, oh, great. You know, because I don't know about cats, and I, like you said, they're hard to get. They don't do what you want them to do, so I was grateful if they showed up.
It's fascinating, too. There are people like Linda Ramone, and obviously I know the Ramones. I knew the Ramones. I was fascinated by her living room, which had a huge Emmanuel poster.
I know.
And tons of
it. That house. Oh, my
lots
God.
Of was and what was the story with the peacock? Was that a sculpture? Was that a stuffed peacock? What the hell was that? Off to the
I can't remember. Is it white?
Yes.
Okay. No, it's stuffed.
Okay. So it's not.
Yes, I think it's a taxi. I'd have to put it in front of me.
Okay.
But I think it's a taxidermied peacock. But she has she moved there with Johnny, was her husband, right? So
yeah.
they moved out there, and then he passed away, and she kept the house. And they have, like, theme rooms. So, like, I got to see most of them. But there's a couple of those theme rooms that I had been warned not to go in, and I didn't even ask. Let's just leave it at that.
Was that to do with Sybil the Dominatrix?
No, not at all.
Because her house, the funny thing about her is...
Who, Sybil?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that, if you want to think about what a dominatrix is... like living room or inside room would look like, that was it. It was like sort of classic.
That's a cliche.
It was.
Sure.
It really was. But I loved her for doing that. Good on her.
Yeah. No, I agree. And who was the other one? I can't remember her name. She was really cute, ready hair, and she's sitting on this chair with these like, you know, kind of go-go dancer shoes.
Yes.
And I got to her house, opens the door, sweet as pie too, lovely person, and I'm standing in the living room, which is painted flat black with a stripper pole in the middle of the living room. And I was like, wow, you know, this is, where am I? This is amazing. I thought, you know, I don't know. Like, okay. But I didn't want to shoot in there. I thought, let's go somewhere that's a little more personal, where there's more stuff, your stuff. I'm always looking for the stuff. It was like, yeah, let's do it in here. So that was that.
There are a few, though, that are sort of minimalist. And that was fascinating to me with so many people with so many tchotchkes and interesting things on their wall and records and books. But there are a few people that it was incredibly minimal. There was in the New Yorker's book, Jen Poe had an amazing view.
That was God. That apartment was to
what,
die for.
What was you? Can't, I know. Holy.
Well, that she was important for me to have her in that book because in New York we have all kinds of lotteries for inexpensive apartments. Like there'll be high rise, really expensive, fancy places, and then they'll have a 10% of a lottery. So 10% of the building will go to people who win the lottery, and then the rent is $600 a month.
Huh.
If you win the lottery. And she was a lottery winner. So that was a new building in Hudson Yards.
People have to see this view. It was like something out of a movie.
It was. And it floor-to-ceiling windows. Now, the apartment wasn't really large, but like, who cares if that's
Well, you know, that's another thing about New York, the New York biographies. A lot of people talked about, thankfully, living in rent-controlled areas.
Well, yeah, because Mark...
I totally get it.
Most people who are not really, really, really wealthy, who still manage to live in Manhattan, they have, you know, it's not made for us anymore, regular people. Like, you can't live there anymore unless something...
Rent-stabilized.
Exactly. Yeah. And those are not easy to get either anymore. You know, if you're grandfathered in, you might be okay, but, you know, they don't want regular people there anymore. The developers don't care about regular people. Now, that's going to bite them in the ass. I mean, I think it already has, because the young kids, well, which I was at one time when I moved to New York City, I was an art college student, and everybody who was anybody was living there. Nobody can move there anymore.
Yeah, I
know. So there's the interesting influx of creatives is over.
Yeah.
And that makes me really sad, you know, and I don't know where they're going. I mean, Patti Smith, I think, said recently, you have to move somewhere like Poughkeepsie, because if you're an artist, you have to be able to blow stuff up in your background,
right,
in your backyard, I mean, and not get arrested. And you can't do that in New York anymore.
I know. I think that era of New York is gone forever.
Oh, it's totally over.
It's not coming back.
No, not in my lifetime, that's for sure. But you know what? Creatives are like weeds that grow up between sidewalk blocks. You cannot stop us. It's a neurosis. You can't help it. They're going to go somewhere. I just want to know where they're living, and then I'm going to move there.
Well, we're out of time.
Oh.
I know, and I didn't even get to ask you a lot of questions about your early artistic years. That'll be questions for another time. My guest tonight is photographer Sally Davis, and we're talking about her new book, California Dreamers, as well as the book New Yorkers. You just got to get the New Yorkers one just to see Iris Rose's Pez dispensers. Sal, thank you so much for your time, and I really loved your work.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for having me. It's been great.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.